Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Being the one you have is even more important than ever. At AMCO in Santa Cruz, I guarantee you'll get the best service in the county. We're not only a transmission center. We'll service and maintain your car to warranty specifications and offer free towing for major repairs from anywhere in Santa Cruz County. With AMCO Santa Cruz, you not only have a guy, you've got a gal too. Me.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Dan Revive, just published the Forbes list of billionaires on this planet, and there are fewer with our weak economy. First time in 6 years, the number of billionaires has shrunk. Now fewer than 800, down from more than 1,100 mega-wealthy last year. Tatiana Serafin of Forbes magazine tells us that regaining his number one status, richest person on earth is Bill Gates.
Although Microsoft stock is down and he actually lost a bunch of money, he is still number one at $40 billion.
Gates's friend and philanthropy partner Warren Buffett slipped to number two. He's worth $37 billion, down by around 40% this past year. Like most folks, alleged Ponzi scheme impresario Bernard Madoff may not reveal anything while filing guilty pleas in New York tomorrow, but investigators are digging into who helped him.
They're certainly focusing on his sons, Andrew and Mark, who are the director of trading for the securities firm, his brother Peter, who was really de facto number two at the firm, the company's chief compliance officer, and then his wife Ruth, who claims $69 million of assets as her own and not her husband's.
CBS News chief investigative correspondent Armin Katayan. We know the name of the mass murderer in Alabama yesterday, Michael McClendon, age 28. He killed 10 people, including some kids and his mother, CBS's Mark Strassman reports.
Whatever he's trying to figure out is why. What caused this guy to snap? The local district attorney says they found a list of names in the gunman's home. It was a list of people who had apparently done him wrong, and he was apparently out to get these people.
He killed himself, and that's what a 17-year-old did in Germany after committing a massacre at his old high school. He shot dead 15 people. Space Shuttle Discovery, already delayed 1 month by bad valves, was supposed to head up into orbit tonight. But correspondent Peter King, you're at the Space Center in Florida. The launch is scrubbed.
This time because of a gas leak from where the fuel line meets the fuel tank. Hydrogen is extremely flammable. Nobody was taking chances. The gas was vented. The tank emptied. The crew never even got to suit up. Mission managers are meeting right now. They're trying to figure out if the leak came from the shuttle or the ground equipment and how to fix it. They hope to try again tomorrow if the delay could be longer. Dan?
CBS's Peter King. A new study on the colorless gas ozone. It's not harmless.
Breathing ozone for long periods of time raises your risk of dying from a respiratory ailment. That finding in a huge New England Journal of Medicine study, lead author Michael Jarrett of the University of California, Berkeley.
There are approximately 100 million people across the United States that live in areas that have ozone levels above the Environmental Protection Agency's prescribed standards.
The death risk difference between high ozone areas and low ones? About threefold. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
The stock markets the day after a big rally did not do much. The Dow Jones closed up 4 points. This is CBS News.
Hey, honey, notice anything different about me?
Yeah, I do. There's some guy on the back of your bike. And is that a megaphone?
She's the hottest biker on two wheels, brains, beauty, and the need for speed.
I saved so much money on motorcycle insurance by switching to Geico. I bought a hype man.
She has got it all. What?
I don't know. What?
Saving you money on your motorcycle insurance is our business. What you do with the money is your business.
That's right.
Call today or visit Geico.com to see how much you could save.
Looking for a market-proof vest? Try this on for size. A market-proof CD from GMAC Bank. It's FDIC insured. And better yet, our 12-month CD has a 2.95% annual percentage yield. That's positively one of the best rates available. And it guarantees your money makes money. Lock in now. Go to gmacbank.com/radio or call 1-800-490-GMAC. Open a CD with as little as $500 and feel confident knowing your money's wearing body armor. GMAC Bank. Smart, simple, safe. Member FDIC.
The world's top internet search company Google is starting to send ads to your computer based on tracking your web surfing. CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick with more.
Google promises it will be simple to opt out of this internet tracking. Ari Schwartz of the Center for Democracy and Technology isn't convinced.
We like the controls that Google has added in terms of letting you see your profile, but the opt-out should be much easier.
CNET's Rafe Needleman says it's not the reputable companies like Google we should be worried about.
You have to assume that when you're on the Internet, that what you are doing is being recorded somewhere. So the question is, who has that information, and what are they doing with it, and what happens if information gets out of their control?
Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
Former football star Michael Vick will have to pay for his travel from his federal prison cell at Leavenworth in Kansas to a bankruptcy hearing in Virginia. The judge said he needs to see Vic to consider his court filing to escape his debts. Dan Revive, CBS News.
Get the good stuff!
Hey, Mike Waltrip here. You know those makeover shows where they turn a dumpy-looking house into something really special? Well, we'd like to do the same thing with your hat. So stop into any participating Napa Auto Parts store, and with a purchase, turn one of your old hats into a 2009 Napa Racing hat. And while you're in there, why not pick up some incredible Napa parts and give your car a makeover as well? The Napa Hat Swap. Limit one per customer. Only good while supplies last.
Napa. Get the good stuff!
My husband had a health concern a month ago.
Mr. Thompson, everything looks good.
Oh, thanks, doctor.
Turned out to be nothing, but it got us doing more for our health.
And stretch!
Like morning exercise and taking silver.
Centrum Silver multivitamins are age-adjusted. They help protect your health as you age with key antioxidants and other nutrients that help protect the health of your heart, eyes, and bones.
Things have sure changed around here.
Age-adjusted Centrum Silver. Take along with a healthy diet and exercise. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show, where we've been on the air for 30 seconds and we're glitch-free. Let's hope we can keep it that way. Yesterday was not quite so smooth. I apologize to our listeners and to our great radio station affiliates. We had a $300 little gizmo blow up here, and it ruined my whole damn day. But it's fixed, and we're on the air.
I don't know what matters to you at this moment, but that's all that matters to me. How are you?
Much better, thank you, Gnarls. And among the guests on yesterday's broadcast we had to cancel is the guy who runs the Oscars, the president of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, Sid Gannis. And he's rescheduled with us for the second hour on Friday. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that. He just returned from a filmmaker meeting in Tehran, Iran, and got some very interesting reaction, not all of it positive. And Sid Gannis will tell us that story Friday, second hour, Peter B. Collins Show. Hope you'll join us then. A little bit later this hour, Phyllis Bennis will return to the program from the Institute for Policy Studies. I want to talk to her about the Israel-Palestine problem and Secretary Clinton's recent visit there, packing $900 million in our money, and also the situation in Afghanistan, which Obama and the generals acknowledge is a losing situation. And can we actually find moderate elements of the Taliban to deal with? I'm not sure. Also on today's program, we'll take a look at the drug violence that is spiraling in Mexico. Many Americans canceled their spring break at Cancun or Cozumel or other beachfront points. And we're going to talk to Maureen Meyer from the Washington Office on Latin America coming up next hour. Then a special segment for our listeners in Seattle. That's our newest affiliate, KPTK, where we're heard 6 to 9 p.m. weeknights. Stephen Reisler will be joining us. He's a Seattle attorney. And he's part of a group that's putting on a conference called the Law of the Commons Seminar at Seattle University on Friday. And he'll be joined by one of the presenters at that seminar, Cindy Cohn from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. They do a lot of great work about the Internet and our privacy rights and free speech rights. So that'll be coming up in the second hour today. And in our third hour, available on most of our affiliated radio stations, we'll talk with Dr. Dot Meaver, who is co-director of the new National Peace Academy. She was a campaign manager for Denis Kucinich for president last year, and this Peace Academy, I believe, comes out of a proposal from the congressman for a peace department in the cabinet. Also on today's program, the salmon run on the West Coast, likely to be canceled again this year. We'll talk to Dave Bitz. He's a fisherman in Eureka who fishes salmon and crab, and he's also president of the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations. That's our agenda today. What's yours? You can call and tell me what's on your mind at any moment. My toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We kick off the program today with a report on the performance of the media. It sucks, and Eric, thank you very much. Hello, Eric.
Hey, Peter, how are you? You caught me off guard there.
I guess I did. Eric Bullard is a very senior fellow and a real tall guy at Media Matters for America, their powerful website, mediamatters.org. Eric, have you ever belonged to a union?
I have not, no.
Yeah, well, I've been in my union for 32 years now, and it's been very good for me. They have my pension, and occasionally when I make enough money under the union, I get health benefits, too. And I, just in the interest of full disclosure, I spent 10 years serving on the national board of my union. So I know some of the issues that we're confronting right now. And the big push this year by labor forces is called the Employee Free Choice Act. And it's being introduced, I believe, in Washington today. And this is something I fully support. And it's not well understood. And because of that, it makes a very ripe target for the pro-business and Republican interests who are busy attacking it. So item A here, full-page ad in today's New York Times, and they lead with a quote from Larry Summers, now a top economic advisor to President Obama, quote, another cause of long-term unemployment is unionization. And then they try to blame the job loss since November on unions, which is really far-fetched. And then they tell you for more information to visit a website, and we won't plug it because it's a front group. It's an AstroTurf group. Then Katrina got an email. Here it is from another AstroTurf group with a happy name called the, where is it? It's IWF, the International Women's Forum. Doesn't that sound like a real good government organization? Well, they say the Democrat-controlled Congress, and when you see that, you know that it's coming from the right-wing talking point creators. It's not democratic. The Democrat-controlled Congress is set to introduce the Employee Free Choice Act. Despite the positive-sounding name, the bill would not afford workers any new rights. Instead, it would take away a fundamental right, the right to a secret ballot election as to whether or not to join a union. Now, they have coordinated their talking points. And over at the Fox News Channel, they're presenting about every 20 minutes, Eric.
Yeah, it's funny. I was actually on Fox Business News yesterday with my new friend, Neil Cavuto.
Uh-huh.
And I was just waiting in the green room, and I was watching Fox News. I don't even think I get it at home. But so I was watching it, and they brought up the Business News Channel, that is. And they brought up this legislation.
Uh-huh.
And there was just sort of the automatic presumption that unions are bad for the economy. Unions mean fewer jobs. And the premise this woman who was interviewing is, well, gee, we're in a tough economic time. Is this really the right time for unions? So it's interesting. It's definitely Fox News, but also just sort of in general, there's this sort of presumption at the press that if the unions are going to thrive, then the economy is going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
That there's this some sort of strange connection. I think it goes back to, some of it goes back to the debate about the big three last November and December in terms of bailout.
Mm-hmm.
Press spent an awful lot of time talking about the unions as if it were, the union employees and the middle class workers who had driven those companies into the ditch. So the press definitely has this very sort of anti-union feel to it. Media Matters put up an item today, both Politico and I think it was AP. In news articles, reporters on their own described this union legislation as divisive. It wasn't even, they weren't even quoting anyone. That's sort of their starting point, that this is controversial, it's divisive, and it's going to be bad for the economy. And that's sort of the starting point for that debate, which is pretty amazing.
Well, And just like the term liberal has been poisoned, labor union, these are terms that have been poisoned over the last 25 years. And we see it in sharp relief here in Silicon Valley in California, Eric, where people, even if they only make $15 an hour sweeping the floors at Google, some of them do get stock options. And there are people who do buy into the Bush-promoted concept of the ownership society.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely true in terms of the Silicon Valley and stuff. There's this entrepreneurial thing, like, we don't need unions, we're above unions,
right.
We're smart enough, we have our own ideas, why, you know, we're sort of brilliant and we're not going to lean on anybody else. This sort of ultimate meritocracy and things like that. So I do think there is that sort of libertarian streak within the tech community.
And here's something else that feeds it. This is an alleged public service announcement from another one of these phony front groups called the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation, Inc.
I work hard, and I don't want anybody using my money to support things I might not agree with, like the political stuff my union was doing with my dues. And they told me I had to pay them or lose my job. It's good that the National Right to Work Foundation and the U.S. Supreme Court agreed that U.S. workers can't be compelled to support a union's political activities through forced union dues. They helped me get my money back. For free information or help, call National Right to Work at 800-336-3600.
And what that is, there is a thing called Financial Core, which means you can notify your union that you are only a member, you know, against your better judgment or because you have to keep your job. But that you don't want to support any political activities. And then they have to reduce your dues by the percentage of the amount that they spend on political activities. And this is just another way that big business is trying to use, in this case, the voice of an African-American worker, to try to persuade people that unions are bad.
Unions is synonymous with politics, in that if you're joining a union, that means you're automatically becoming political, and that's just not true.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole backdrop for this is the Republican Party is absolutely terrified of this bill, and it's terrified of the expanding union base. The union vote has been, like many other segments, has been dwindling for Republicans, and they understand that if they have almost no contact in terms of the union workforce.
And let's deal with one critical issue here that underscores the lies that are being told. Rachel Maddow did a great job of explaining this issue on the lead story on her Tuesday night program on MSNBC. And fundamentally, what the Employee Free Choice Act would do would give workers the option of whether to use the card check method or a secret ballot in order deciding whether a certain group of workers at a certain shop want to be represented by a specific union.
Right.
And it does ban management from selecting which method is used.
Right.
But it does not limit the choice of workers. But the lie that's being told is, it's right here, as you quote Fox News' Kelly somebody,
right.
She said that it would eliminate the workers' right to a secret ballot. That is flatly untrue.
Right, and it is complicated, and the legislation does include, it's vaguely accurate. Meaning, you're right, it's completely inaccurate, but yes, legislation has to do with unions, yes, it has to do with voting, yes, it has to do with getting rid of some voting process, but the key is, as you say, it would eliminate the employer. Right now, the employer has the choice, not the employees. So Fox and others are sort of trying to, scare workers into think that something is being taken away from them.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be herded into these unions, and these unions are going to spend all their fees on, left-wing politics. That's clearly the picture that's being painted.
Well, and Eric, for me, one of the most bizarre and memorable moments of the presidential campaign last year was the Saddleback Church interview of John McCain, where he was asked a question about prisoners at Guantanamo, and he answered it by saying that he didn't want to give up the secret ballot for union elections in this country. It was just bizarre. We'll continue in a moment. Eric Bollert's our guest from Media Matters, mediamatters.org on the web. If you have a comment, you can join me now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, The Peter B. Collins Show, wearing that union label.
this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffee-topia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Mmm. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system. Your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Hi, I'm Mike Hamilton with some straight talk about sleep apnea. 20 million Americans suffer from it. It's a dangerous life-threatening disorder that is often treated with the CPAP machine. However, only half the people prescribed CPAP use it regularly. Patients tell me they hate CPAP's noise, mask, and hose, so they don't use it. That decision could kill you. Here's what I recommend. Call Dr. Terry Forsberg at his Sleep Apnea Treatment Center, 831-685-3300. Dr. Forsberg and his dental team are recognized clinicians on providing alternatives to CPAP. Call Dr. Forsberg today, 831-685-3300, and online at montereybay.ihatecpap.com. Oral appliances are effective and can help save lives. If you suffer from sleep apnea or know someone who does, please, won't you call Dr. Terry Forsberg today, 831-685-3300. Dr. Terry Forsberg, rest assured, it's worth the trip.
Peter B. Collins Show rolls on, bouncing off a satellite. Continue with Eric Bollert from Media Matters on the web at MediaMatters.org. And Eric, one of the games that's played in syndicated talk radio is how many stations and how big is the audience? And your column this week at Media Matters is about the claims of Rush Limbaugh and his fans about the size of his audience. And this is a very interesting area because, for example, a couple of years back, somebody did an actual study by calling every radio station that was claimed as an affiliate by Michael Savage, and it turned out his list was inflated by at least 100%. And, of course, you know, then you have to take those stations that actually carry a single program and add up all the ratings from across the country. Now, there is a national report called Radar, which Arbitron publishes, but you have to be an ad agency or a big subscriber to see it. And it does publish the numbers of nationally syndicated radio shows. But what you explore in the piece is that Howard Kurtz over at the Washington Post was tossing around numbers without any real attribution or proof. And then they go to this guy, Mike Harrison, at Talkers Magazine. And let me just say as diplomatically as I can, I've known Mike Harrison and followed his work since the mid-1980s. And he's not a journalist. He runs a nice little operation where if you buy an ad in his magazine, you get covered in his magazine. But I do not regard him as a reliable source, particularly when it comes to talking about some of the top paid talk guys in the business, because he'll kiss their ass before he tells the truth.
Well, and that's what prompted me to write it was the Howard Kurtz's original piece last Friday, where in the very first sentence he announced that Rush Limbaugh had doubled his rating. And back from my previous life as a Billboard magazine reporter, I knew that didn't make sense because there was no way anyone knew if Rush Limbaugh's radio's ratings had doubled and wouldn't know for months. And as you mentioned, reporters would never know because the only the way they can find out is if Rush Limbaugh's syndicator doles out those numbers, so that doesn't make them reliable. And actually the next day the Post, a different writer at the Post, wrote a very good story basically indicating that no one has any idea how big Rush Limbaugh's radio audience is. And then I looked at, we've been told forever that 20 million listener number.
Right.
And that sounds enormous. I mean, Keith Olbermann gets about 1.5 million. Rachel Maddow gets about 1.5 million. Bill O'Reilly gets maybe 2 or 3 million. And here's Limbaugh with 20 million. That has clearly led to this sort of awestruck coverage that he's got over the years. And I went back and I looked and I saw the first reference I could find was 1993. And where did that number come from? It came from his syndicator. They've been claiming the exact same number for 16 years. I mean, you're in the radio business. The odds that a show or a talk show host would have the exact same size audience for 16 years is sort of laughable.
Well, based on
the
surveys,
it
can fluctuate widely. You can hold the same share,
right?
Okay, a percentage of listeners,
right?
But the number that represents will vary widely in a big market like New York or San Francisco,
right? And the 20
from one
million,
report to the next.
And this 20 million number is a total farce because it's sort of this radio, you know, gift where it's a cumulative number. So it's in theory, any possible person who listens to Limbaugh for even 2 minutes of his 15 hours each week. And, I mean, it's this sort of dog and pony number that the radio industry uses. What you really want to look at is the share in individual markets. So even the 20 million number doesn't make any sense. It's self-produced from Limbaugh's camp.
Well,
I found over 800 references over the years to Limbaugh, 20 million listeners.
Yeah.
And now Howard Kurtz wants to double it.
Are you interested in running down a hard number?
Sure.
Okay, I'll email you, and I'm going to connect you with my friend Rocky Cosgrove. He works for one of the radio rep firms, and he has access to, just like you've got LexisNexis, he's got access to all the computer ratings numbers, and I'll bet you in a few clicks, he could come up with a pretty reliable hard number of the recent months on the Limbaugh show, and we
right.
can find out if things
great. I'm
actually
sure
have
off,
moved.
But this idea that it doubled and the idea that Howard Kurtz would use the Michael Harrison quote, and then Michael Harrison, who runs this Talkers magazine,
yeah.
then told the Post, well, it's not ratings, it's not science, it's my guess.
Well, he was honest that time.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Eric.
All right, I'll talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Eric Bollert, MediaMatters.org. Phyllis Bennis joins me next from the Institute for Policy Studies. We'll talk about Israel and Afghanistan.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by GM, offering 20 models that get more than 30 miles per gallon or better in EPA-estimated highway fuel economy, more than any other manufacturer. Go to gm.com/solutions. I'm Charles Osgood. Has the economic crisis hurt President Obama or helped him to push all the change in spending through Congress in his first 50 days? His chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, has told him never let a crisis go to waste. So in 50 days, he's piled one major spending program on one subject after another. Now, he's turned to education with the same urgent sense of now or never.
We've got a unique window here where there's a broad consensus across America that we've got to try some new things to make sure that our schools work. And we've got to take advantage of that opportunity.
No question, he's been fast out of the gate, says CBS News chief Washington correspondent Bob Schieffer. But will these programs work?
Just getting them through the Congress, as far as an achievement, I think you have to give him credit for that. I think he's moving quickly. But again, has he done the right thing? We don't simply know the answer to that question right now.
More after this. You know what I love most about Stamps.com? Never having to go to the post office. And the secret's out. Stamps.com has been featured in the New York Times, the Boston Globe, and PC World. Stamps.com users have already printed more than $1 billion in postage. You can print all of your postage using your own computer and printer. No trips to the post office, no leasing an expensive postage meter. With Stamps.com, you'll save time and money. We love Stamps.com. It's fast, it's easy, and it's convenient. Right now, and I know you'll like this a lot, I've arranged for a special offer for my listeners. A four-week trial, plus a $100 bonus offer, including $45 in free postage. That's more free postage if you use my name, Osgood. Try Stamps.com today. For the four-week trial and the $100 bonus offer, go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone you'll find at the top of the home page and type in my name, Osgood, O-S-G-O-O-D. Stamps.com, and be sure to enter Osgood. Do it today, and you can start saving time and money on postage. So far, so fast has been President Obama's pace so far, but some people across the country and in Congress are beginning to wonder if it's so far so good, says Republican Mike Pence of Indiana.
The reason why the president's budget is hard to market is because it spends too much, it taxes too much, and it borrows too much, and the American people know that.
Do we really need or really want to remake America this much, this fast? Says our colleague Bob Schieffer.
Lyndon Johnson used to say, the most significant things you're going to get done, you have to get them done in the first year, because the second year, the Congress starts thinking about itself, not about you. So I think every president tries to move fast. I think he's off to a fast start. We'll find out in the coming months if a fast start means that he's doing the right thing.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buyrite Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buyrite has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buyrite Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buyrite Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buyrite Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. You're invited to join the conversation. If you're listening live, you can call in live. It's that simple. 888-5-PETER-B.
Sometimes you start feeling so lost and lonely.
next hour on the Peter B. Collins Show, we're going to take a look at the drug violence that's spiraling out of control in Mexico and also the extent to which it's a threat to American tourists, a lot of college students on spring break in Mexico. Also on today's program, about an hour away, we'll take a look at a conference that's being held in Seattle at Seattle University on Friday called the Law of the Commons Seminar. And if that doesn't really strike a chord with you, just think of the commons. The commons would be the green space in your community. The radio spectrum that this program is delivered to you on, in my view, is part of the commons. The internet, I view, as part of the commons. Corporate interests don't see it that way. And to me, the most graphic example is this bottled water that I'm sipping on today that was pumped out of the ground by an affiliate of the Nestle company, put into a bottle, and no payment was made to the people in the area where that water came from. It was just stolen fair and square. So we're going to talk about that with Stephen Reisler and also with Cindy Cohn from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. That's coming up just about an hour from now. Phyllis Bennis returns to our program from the Institute for Policy Studies, and hopefully she's taking a break because last year she pounded out three important little books, little only in terms of their size, but one was Ending the Iraq War, the other Understanding the U.S.-Iran Crisis, and the third Understanding the Palestinian-Israeli Conflict, and these are primers on the issues. Have I covered them all, Phyllis?
You have. I'm in the middle of a new one on Afghanistan.
Oh, good. Well, can you get that one out in the next 2 weeks?
No.
Well, I want to talk with you about Secretary Clinton's recent trip to the Middle East, including Israel and Palestine. And I also want to talk about Afghanistan because I think that's where some of the most critical policy decisions are being made these days.
Indeed.
But let me start with the withdrawal of Chaz Freeman. Charles Freeman was appointed to a top-level post in the National Security Directorate, if you will, and he has withdrawn his nomination. And Senator Chuck Schumer of New York is claiming credit in part for his scalp on this. And I am deeply disappointed because Freeman has been honest and open and critical about our policies toward Israel and Palestine and our policies in Afghanistan. And I believe his voice is crucial to Obama really activating his promise to have dissenting views in his own cabinet.
Absolutely. This was a very disappointing move. And it was, I think, actually the first specific action that we've seen from the Obama White House that was that kind of a disappointment on Israel-Palestine. The irony is the appointment of Charles Freeman was not to a position that really had much to do with Israel-Palestine.
Yeah.
He would have been the chairman of the intelligence agency that coordinates intelligence work.
And the most critical, the most critical job that comes out of that office is the preparation of national intelligence estimates.
Exactly.
Which collate the
one in December of 2007 that finally confirmed what so many had already been saying, that all 16 intelligence agencies of the United States agreed that Iran was not building a nuclear weapon and didn't have one.
Mm-hmm.
That was a crucial thing for them to do. The problem is the appointment was made by Admiral Dennis Blair, who is President Obama's national security advisor. And in that context, it was not something that was going to have to be vetted and ratified by the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
So the attack on it came from the media, from members of Congress. It wasn't in the context of a congressional hearing where you could actually ask him serious questions and get serious answers. It was all in the basis of allegations, misquotes, and essentially it had everything to do with the fact that he has been very critical of the Israeli occupation.
Yes, he
from
was
the most recent in terms of the Gaza attacks of last December through 25 years of diplomacy. The irony is he's not a particularly radical guy. He comes out of this very mainstream sector of people in the State Department. He's a former ambassador to Saudi Arabia and elsewhere. Who has a very, what's known as a realist view of U.S. foreign policy interests, which means you move with the powerful. I mean, I don't particularly agree with him on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But his criticism of Israel is the only thing that's really at stake here. It's the only reason that he was condemned by people like Charles Schumer and others. The AIPAC, the leading component of the pro-Israeli lobby, claimed that they had nothing to do with it, but it's what one member of Congress actually called an open secret in Washington, that they were orchestrating this campaign. This was a very consciously done campaign, and the really disappointing part is not necessarily that he's not going to be there. There's plenty of other good people that could be in that position. The real bad news of it is that the Obama White House did not stand up for him.
Yeah.
The only one who protected him or tried to was Admiral Blair, who had appointed him in the first place. There was not a peep out of the White House itself. And this is the first that we've actually seen in action. We've heard some pretty bad rhetoric on occasion from both President Obama and Secretary of State Clinton, but their actions have not necessarily matched that. The appointment of George Mitchell as the special envoy, the appointment of Charles Freeman. So this was the first really overt act that the Israeli lobby is calling a victory, and that's already the headlines in a number of articles, and it's a very sad moment. I hope that it's an anomaly, that it's not an indication of things to come.
Well, then let's take a look at actions. As the newly minted Secretary of State went to Israel last week and also visited with the Fatah leadership of the Palestinian Authority. And at first I was pleased to hear that the U.S. was committing $900 million to relief aid, but they parsed it out so that only $300 million is going to repair the damage in Gaza, and the other $600 million goes to the acknowledged corrupt Fatah organization. Now, I'm not saying that Hamas is not problem-free either, but it just strikes me that we continue to feed the divide among the Palestinians in this manner.
That's certainly true, Peter, and it's a big problem. But I think right now there is a bigger problem, and the big challenge for Secretary of State Clinton is going to be how she deals with this one. And that is the refusal of Israel to allow any reconstruction and rebuilding aid in. So whether it's $300 million or $900 million that's going to go to rebuild Gaza, none of it can be used because the Israelis are keeping the doors of Gaza locked tight shut. And they're not allowing in cement to rebuild homes, steel for buildings, building wire, nothing of the infrastructure requirement.
Mm-hmm.
Their position is that they are allowing in humanitarian aid. We're allowing in up to 200 trucks a day. Well, first of all, it's not 200 trucks every day. A few times it has been. But according to the United Nations, the minimum, just for basic life in Gaza, is 750 trucks a day. Remember, we're talking about 1.5 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And that refusal to allow in reconstruction equipment, cement, steel, tools, means that there is no rebuilding in Gaza. People are still living on the ground. They're living in tents. They still don't have electricity. The infrastructure is still completely damaged. And there's no rebuilding going on because there's nothing to rebuild with. The U.S. and the other countries can pledge money, and that's all very nice. But it's, one, you're right to talk about the insufficiencies of it and how the U.S. is using it in a way that's undermining the potential, particularly right now when the two Palestinian factions are engaged in a new round of unity talks under Egyptian auspices. There's a little bit of hope that that might lead to something. The Europeans have moved a little bit and said that they would be willing to consider dealing with a unity government that included Hamas. The U.S. is not saying right now, which is perhaps a good thing, better than an immediate response, which would undoubtedly be no. But the big problem is they're not putting enough pressure. I shouldn't say any because I don't know if there's any backroom stuff. But whatever they're doing, it's not enough to push the Israelis to open the gates, end the blockade absolutely. And the U.S. has just reaffirmed that it will continue to send the $3 billion a year in U.S. military aid to Israel without holding it accountable for not allowing in the minimal amount of aid that the U.S. wants to send for rebuilding Gaza.
And Phyllis Bennis, this leads to another critical question here. $900 million, not a whole lot in the scheme of things, but even though I wasn't a Madoff client, I'm feeling kind of poor these days and a little overtapped in bailouts. And when I first looked at this, I said, well, that's a nice gesture from the Obama administration. How much is Israel pledging to rebuild Gaza? Because Israel unilaterally destroyed so many communities and homes as they were digging for tunnels and you know, the other efforts that they used during the 22-day war that started around Christmas time.
Well, you know, Peter, that to ask that question is to answer. There is no pledge from Israel. The Israeli position remains unchanged, that it's the responsibility of the international community to rebuild what they destroy.
Why?
The problem is that so far, the international community, such as it is, particularly Europe here, is particularly responsible for this, taking the position that they will not pressure Israel to stop its occupation, stop its policies that are destroying lives, as well as destroying buildings and hospitals and schools and mosques and all the other infrastructure that was destroyed in that last attack on Gaza in December and January. But they expect the Europeans to throw money back and rebuild again so they can bomb it again. This has been a cycle that has gone on in Gaza since 1967. And, you know, this is a very serious problem. It's something that the Europeans have simply not been willing to take responsibility for, that they have an obligation to push for an end to occupation.
Mm-hmm.
They have not been doing that. The U.S., of course, is the primary one responsible because it's U.S. support, the $3 billion a year in military aid, the absolute embrace at the United Nations that allows full diplomatic impunity for these violations, ensuring that Israel is not held accountable in the United Nations. All of that is what enables the violations to continue. And as long as the Israeli position is, hey, it's not our job to rebuild, and the international community, instead of saying, it damn well is, you are the occupying power, and you are one in massive violation of international law, that which puts you in additional obligations to rebuild, but two, you are the occupying power anyway, with a clear, unequivocal obligation under the Geneva Convention to provide the occupied population with all the basic necessities of life, including adequate food, clean water, education, recreation. Who knew? The Geneva Conventions even require them to provide fun. But, you know, these are very specific requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And Israel simply ignores them, and the Europeans accept that position, as does the United States.
Well, if they were listening to me, Phyllis, it would be different, because what I do is offer that $900 million to the Palestinians and take it from the $3 billion that we give to Israel every year.
That would be a very good starting point, Peter. It would be a very good starting point.
Another reason.
There is a move afoot. I think
let me stop you there, Phyllis. I've got to run to a break here, and we'll pick up as we continue. Phyllis Bennis is our guest from the Institute for Policy Studies. Her forthcoming book about Afghanistan will be out soon, but she's written three about the Iraq War, about Iran, and about the Israel-Palestine conflict, and you can find them at your local independent bookstore. More in a moment. Your calls are welcome. 888-5-PETER-B. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Peninsula Gem and Jewelry in Monterey is like no other store on the peninsula. 30 years family owned and operated, Peninsula Gem specializes in finished jewelry, jewelry repair, and custom design. Supplying tools and materials for the jeweler and lapidarist from precious metals to cutting materials. Check out the spectacular Monterey Jade and other collectible minerals. Great gift ideas too. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry is at 2245 North Fremont Street, right next to Big Five in Monterey. Open Tuesday through Saturday. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry.
Sometimes things just make sense.
Sure, like buying a scooter when gas prices go crazy.
Or putting Sharp business equipment in your office.
How does that make sense?
It makes sense to have the number one digital copier in America working for you, right?
Sure.
Well, that's how it makes sense.
I get it, but...
Here, try this.
Since 1981, this family-owned business has been about one thing, results, which is why Tri-County Business Systems is a Sharp dealer. Sharp is technology-driven, featuring OSA, open systems architecture. You can customize applications that promote efficient workflow. And because they're built to last, your total cost of ownership is reduced for long-term results. If you're a QuickBooks user, Sharp's OSA system allows you to quickly scan directly into your client's folder right from the machine. So call Tri-County Business Systems at 758-1474 and learn more today. Tri-County Business Systems, 758-1474. Solutions that connect with you. Tri-County Business Systems.
Cornucopia Landscaping in Santa Cruz is a complete design, installation, and maintenance company. Cornucopia Landscaping specializes in water-saving gardens which retain a lush appearance. You can have fruit trees, grapevines, fresh vegetables, and many beautiful ornamental plants while using very little water. In fact, an entire cornucopia landscaping garden sips only as much water in a season as a lawn of equal size gulps down in 1 week. Drip irrigation is the key to a water-saving garden. Are you looking for a beautiful flagstone pathway? Cornucopia Landscaping builds decks, patios, arbors, fences, retaining walls, planter boxes, and many other custom-built wooden structures. Serving Santa Cruz County since 1996. For more information or consultation, call Davis at 831-335-1209. That's 335-1209. That number again is 335-1209.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool block skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. 9 minutes in front of the hour as we continue with Phyllis Bennis from the Institute for Policy Studies. And Phyllis, I had to cut in there as we were going to a break, and you were going to add another comment about the funding that we give to Israel.
Absolutely. I was just going to mention, I think some of your listeners, Peter, may already know about the work of the U.S. campaign to end Israeli occupation. And one of the projects that's going on right now is a postcard campaign that says on the front with that very beautiful picture of President Obama, and it says, "Dear President Obama, yes, we can end U.S. military aid to Israel." And we've already collected about 20,000 of them. There's more pouring in. They're going to be brought to the White House, I think at the end of this month, with thousands and thousands of signatures of people saying, yes, we should end U.S. military aid to Israel. So anyone who wants to participate in that campaign, you can become an organizer for the campaign, you can get the postcard, it's all online at the U.S. campaign website, which is an easy one to remember, endtheoccupation.org.
I'm writing it down now, endtheoccupation.org.
And I'll tell you one other story, Peter, that's right on the homepage. One of the more outrageous examples of this that we're hearing reminiscences of the sanctions period in Iraq. Recently, the State Department was asked about an Israeli decision last week not to allow a truckload of pasta into Gaza. It was not considered humanitarian. Only rice is humanitarian aid. Pasta is a luxury.
Hmm.
And
you sure it wasn't dual-use weapons-grade pasta?
Well, that was exactly the point. There was an amazing, that would, if the consequences weren't so grave, it would have been incredibly funny. At the daily press briefing in the State Department, and the Secretary of State's spokesman, Mr. Woods, was stuck with these journalists saying, well, what are you saying? Do we agree that this could be a weapon? Is this dual-use here? It sounded like the old decision by the U.S. not to allow pencils into Iraq because pencils have graphite and graphite can be used as a weapon. You know, it was the same kind of language. It was really quite unbelievable.
Let's talk to Mike in Aptos listening on KRXA. Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, sir. I'm generally really liberal, but this really has got my dander up.
Go.
You know, this thing about, first of all, opening the border, if Israel's in a tough spot, if they open the border, the Palestinians are going to bring in weapons. You know, even during the blockade, they're bringing in thousands of weapons. They could smuggle in food. They could smuggle in building supplies. They choose to smuggle in missiles.
And, Mike, do you ever think about the fundamentals here, that they do that because they are living in an open-air prison, that they are under the boot of Israel? And they don't want to live. They don't want to live that way, and they use whatever means available to them to try to resist that.
Well, see, the other thing about that, end the occupation. You have to realize when Palestinians say end the occupation, they're not just talking about Gaza; they're talking about Tel Aviv as well.
Well, I think Mike, that you have it a little bit wrong. I think that there's some very important lessons that we have to learn from former Senator George Mitchell, who's the current special envoy to the region. He helped negotiate the Good Friday Accords in Northern Ireland, and he wrote a very important article a year ago last summer, it was in the summer of 2007, about that experience. That was way before he had anything to do with the Middle East, or certainly not in the position that he's in now. And one of the things he wrote, he said, the first lesson of diplomacy that works is you have to have everybody at the table, even if you don't like them, even if you think they're terrorists. It was the same thing they faced with the IRA. He said, if they're not at the table, whatever deal you reach isn't going to work. It's just not going to work. Then he said, the other thing we have to keep in mind is that you can't ask people to give up their dreams. You can insist that they fight for those dreams using methods of nonviolence, using political rather than military terms. But if there are, and there are, Israelis who want to build a Jewish-only state from the ocean, excuse me, can I just finish? From the ocean to the river, they can have that dream. They just can't militarize the territory as they have. If Palestinians want to dream of a Palestinian state in all of historic Palestine, as was the demand for many, many years, they can dream that. So you can't take away people's dreams. If the illegal control by Israel was lifted, you still have the Israeli side of the border. They can check whatever is going in. You still have the Egyptian side of the border. The reality is the tunnels are used overwhelmingly for food and consumer goods. It's the only access people have. There's a set of tunnels that have been used for military purposes. They may well still be. Some of them have been destroyed. Some of them maybe not. But keeping the official borders closed does not stop that smuggling. It stops the ability of ordinary people to get the ordinary material for daily life. The Geneva Conventions, Article 33, is unequivocal that collective punishment is illegal and forbidden. Full stop. No exceptions. So the point is that even if, it's an even-if line, even if there are 2,000 or 10,000 Palestinian militants in Gaza who might try and send a missile, and we should note that during the period of the ceasefire, the missile fire dropped to virtually nothing, even though Palestinian deaths by Israeli strikes continued. But even if those missiles were being fired, you cannot punish 1.5 million Gazans, half of whom are under the age of 18, for those actions. You can only punish someone for an action that she or he has personally committed.
Okay, let's give Mike a chance here. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, number one, if Gaza is a state, then the actions of the people are responsible for the actions of leaders.
It's not a state. It's not allowed to be a state.
Well,
have no power.
It aspires to statehood, but it's...
a state because they want all of Israel.
No.
Well, you're talking in circles there, Mike. It is not a state, okay?
And the leaders have made clear that they will accept a negotiated peace long-term based on the 67 borders. They've written it in op-eds in the Washington Post. They've said it to President Jimmy Carter. They've said it over and over again, and it remains their position.
And meanwhile, so Mike, Israel talks about expanding its illegal settlements on Palestinian territory even further than where they are today.
Unfortunately, Peter, they're not just
I'm not 100% defending the state of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
The reason the Palestinians can't have weapons, I mean, if they had their own state, they could have their own army, they could have their own weapons. The reason they can't have weapons is because if they have weapons, they use them.
Well,
but the problem is Israel has weapons that we give to the tune of $3 billion a year. All the weapons that Israel used in Gaza were provided by us. They're the ones that were being used. The Palestinians in Gaza had no defensive weapons to protect themselves. There are rockets that can't be aimed. Those rockets are a violation of international law. They should be stopped, and the people using them should be held accountable. But you can't equate them, either in terms of actual damage, actual destruction, numbers of people killed, and most importantly, the obligations and responsibility of our government and us as taxpayers.
I got to stop there, Phyllis. Thank you very much. And Mike, thanks for stepping up with your point of view. I do appreciate it, and I respect you for calling into the program. Phyllis, thank you for joining us. I always appreciate it.
Thank you, Peter. Always a pleasure.
We'll talk again soon. That's Phyllis Bennis at the Institute for Policy Studies. You can share a podcast of this or any other hour of the Peter B. Collins Show with a friend or a stranger. The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com. Thanks to my producer, Katrina Rill, for another fine show today.
Bonjour, this is Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy two bottles, you get one bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/...
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. Bernard Madoff's guilty plea will not end the investigation.
The circle at the moment is widening around Bernie Madoff.
Shock and grief in southern Alabama.
I couldn't sleep last night just knowing what happened and seeing everybody.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. It's the mother of all investment frauds. Bernard Madoff, who allegedly swindled his clients out of nearly $65 billion, is set to plead guilty tomorrow to charges that are likely to send him to prison for the rest of his life. But CBS News investigative correspondent Armin Katayan tells us the prosecutor's work is far from done.
They're certainly focusing on his sons, Andrew and Mark, who are the director of trading for the securities firm, his brother Peter, who was really de facto number two at the firm, the company's chief compliance officer, and then his wife Ruth, of 49 years, who claims $69 million of assets as her own and not her husband's.
They pale in comparison to the Madoff case, but more Ponzi schemes keep surfacing. CBS News reporter Stephanie Lambidakis has the latest.
Many of the new Ponzi scheme cases being filed by the Securities and Exchange Commission are the result of detective work by individual investors and not the SEC. In two cases today from Virginia and California, investors tried unsuccessfully last fall to withdraw money from private investment accounts. In both cases, the alleged Ponzi scheme operators admitted that the money had never been invested in the stock market. The losses in these two cases, more than $50 million.
The new boss at the SEC, Mary Shapiro, told Congress today that the agency will go back to being a tough cop on the beat. Now this.
Check this out.
Hello there. How are you doing? Have you met my friend Bill yet?
Why is there some guy on the back of your bike winking at me?
Oh, that's my wingman. I save so much money on motorcycle insurance by switching to Geico. I rented a wingman.
He has two tickets to paradise and needs a travel companion.
Hey, he is good.
Saving you money on your motorcycle insurance is our business. What you do with the money is your business.
Oh, yeah.
Geico Motorcycle. Let's ride.
Marcia, what's with the grin?
I got great news at my savings checkup.
Your what?
The savings checkup I took at the Sam's Club Pharmacy. I found amazing prices on my monthly prescriptions, and I discovered that members saved as much as 28% last year on select over-the-counter medications. Plus, Sam's Club takes most insurance, and pharmacy staff are available for questions.
Wow, I've got to check that out. Discover your prescription for terrific value. Visit your Sam's Club pharmacy Friday and Saturday to take the savings checkup. For more information, go to samsclub.com/yourhealth.
10 people were killed in southern Alabama before an angry man with an arsenal of weapons took his own life. Among the dead, the wife and young daughter of Sheriff's Deputy Josh Myers.
I just don't understand why anything like this would happen. I don't know what to say.
Myers told reporters he doesn't have a tear left in him. CBS News correspondent Mark Strassman is on the story.
Whatever he is trying to figure out is why. What caused this guy to snap? The local district attorney says they found a list of names in the gunman's home. It was a list of people who had apparently done him wrong, and he was apparently out to get these people.
Many of those killed were relatives of 28-year-old Michael McClendon. Others were total strangers. Germany had its Columbine today. A 17-year-old dressed in black went on a shooting rampage at his former school in the southwestern town of Winnenden. 9 students and 3 teachers, all but one of them female, were killed. After the gunman fled, he killed 3 men before taking his own life. Frank Nipkow edits the local newspaper.
This is a horrible day for the town. This is a horrible day for us. We cannot believe what has happened.
Germany has strict gun laws. Police say the teenager used a gun registered to his father. With no fanfare, President Obama quietly signed a spending bill that includes $5.5 billion in earmarks. Earlier, he called the bill imperfect and said from now on, different standards will apply.
Earmarks must have a legitimate and worthy public purpose. Earmarks that members do seek must be aired on those members' websites in advance.
The president ruled out earmarks for private corporations. In this recession, billionaires have become an endangered species. Writer Tatiana Serafin worked on this year's Forbes list.
It's the first time we've seen declines in the number of billionaires worldwide since 2003. We have this year 793 billionaires. That's down from 1,125 last year.
Bill Gates is back on top with an estimated net worth of $40 billion. Warren Buffett gets bumped to number two because his Berkshire Hathaway stock lost $25 billion. Space Shuttle Discovery didn't get off the ground today. There was a hydrogen fuel leak. They're still trying to find it and fix it. NASA will try again for a launch on Sunday. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Hey, honey, notice anything different about me?
Yeah, I do. There's some guy on the back of your bike. And is that a megaphone?
She's the hottest biker on two wheels, brains, beauty, and the need for speed.
I saved so much money on motorcycle insurance by switching to Geico. I bought a hype man.
She has got it all. What?
I don't know. What?
Saving you money on your motorcycle insurance is our business. What you do with the money is your business.
That's right.
Call today or visit Geico.com to see how much you could save.
Looking for a market-proof vest? Try this on for size. A market-proof CD from GMAC Bank. It's FDIC insured. And better yet, our 12-month CD has a 2.95% annual percentage yield. That's positively one of the best rates available. And it guarantees your money makes money. Lock in now. Go to gmacbank.com/radio or call 1-800-490-GMAC. Open a CD with as little as $500 and feel confident knowing your money's wearing body armor. GMAC Bank. Smart, simple, safe. Member FDIC.
We've heard it so much.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up in the second half, a special for our Seattle listeners. There's a conference at Seattle University Friday on the law of the commons. And you say, huh? Law of the commons? What the hell are they talking about? Well, you'll find out in just about half an hour. It's uncommonly interesting. South of the border in Mexico, things are very tough. And as the government tries to crack down on drug traffickers, these armed drug distributors and syndicates are fighting back big time. At the moment, they seem to have the upper hand. In Ciudad Juarez, they scared off the new chief of police by daylight execution of some of his top lieutenants. And in sunny Cancun, on the Gulf of Mexico, the police chief there was tortured and killed. He was a retired general, Mauro Enrique Tello, and he'd been hired to overhaul the corrupt police force there in Cancun. Now, like many Americans, I've been a tourist in Mexico on numerous occasions. Always had a good time. Montezuma never really extracted revenge. And I've been to Cancun and the nearby island of Cozumel diving on several occasions and really loved it. Well, right now, some college students on spring break are in Mexico. And the New York Times Wednesday profiles the situation and notes that the former director of the CIA, George Tenet, was sufficiently concerned that he persuaded his college-age son, John Michael, to cancel a trip to Acapulco during spring break, and I think he went to Hawaii instead. We get comment on this from, here it is, Maureen Meyer, in the Washington office on Latin America, also known as WALO. Maureen, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter.
So when were you most recently in Mexico yourself?
The last time I was in Mexico was October of last year, and I'm actually going again on this Friday.
Okay. And where are the real serious problems here where the government is confronting these drug operators?
I think this is one of the key issues to discuss is really where are the main growths of violence in the country. And what we really see is, with some exceptions, most of the violence continues to be concentrated in some border cities and some of the states that have always been top areas for drug trafficking and drug-related violence in Mexico. So mainly, for example, Ciudad Juarez, which accounted for over a quarter of the drug-related killings from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Cities like Tijuana, the state of Sinaloa, which has been, you know, stronghold of one of the drug trafficking organizations for years. And some of the states that are on the Pacific coast, which are key traffic transit routes for drugs coming in from the Pacific, particularly Guerrero, which is where Acapulco is located, and the state of Michoacán, President Calderón's home state. But I think in the other side of things, most of Mexico is not being overrun by drug-related violence, and I would go as far to say most security concerns of the majority of Mexican citizens who don't live in these hot spots is more questions of common crime, getting your car robbed, et cetera, and not so much being caught in the crossfire of drug trafficking battles.
Yeah, and to try to put it into some perspective, I have no reports of American tourists being caught up in the crossfire. Do you?
No, and I think there has been one incident maybe 2 years ago of two Canadians that got, you know, there was a shootout in a hotel in Acapulco and they happened to be there, but it's certainly one, they're not necessarily being targeted by any chance. And I think it's also that, you know, not traveling to certain areas that are considered at higher risk is certainly, you know, a caution, a place to, you know, decide your own security. But I think a lot of the particularly touristy areas and the beach resorts in Mexico continue to be relatively safe, taking the normal precautions that you would take as any traveler in terms of not traveling by yourself, taking out money from an ATM machine, making sure you do it in a public area, not at night, not getting into, you know, taxis on the street sometimes. I think there's lots of normal precautions.
Yeah, and bring your own weed. Don't buy it there. I mean, if you must. Let's be prudent about this.
Exactly.
So is this a winnable situation? Because I'm one of those people who feels that the America, you know, that our so-called war on drugs is not only misnamed but misguided, and that these efforts at prohibition are largely going to fail, and that by militarizing it in terms of governments, we basically, force the drug runners to become armed militants as well. So we've escalated this to the point where there is a significant bloodshed. 6,000 people died in Mexico last year in this exchange of fire between the government and drug runners.
Well, and I would agree with you there, Peter. I think that as long as particularly the United States and other, you know, high consumer countries don't take a step back and look at our size of the problem, or our problem, which is the demand for drugs in the United States, and obviously, you know, the legislation regulating that or prohibiting that, that there's going to be, continue to be drug trafficking, drugs entering our country, and the related violence with that. I think a key point here is that Mexico is actually, in a sense, a victim of U.S. policies in this regard, because Mexico was not a significant transit point for cocaine, particularly, until the United States had been very successful in closing off Southern Florida and the Caribbean to being trafficked from Colombia. The Colombian traffickers at the time then saw Mexico as a great, you know, port of entry into the United States, and that's when you start to see a lot of these problems in Mexico. Interestingly enough, Mexican authorities now say that part of their objective is obviously to push the transit of drugs out of Mexico, meaning, well, it's obviously going to show up in another country. So even if you have success in Mexico in terms of, you know, the drug war, which I also agree is mistermed, that it's going to go somewhere else. Obviously, you know, the country, the Caribbean, are again at risk. Central America has become a larger place for the transit of drugs as well. So it's this sort of balloon effect, kind of pushing the problem around instead of attending to the root causes of, you know, drug trafficking and violence, and particularly demand for drugs in the United States.
And I want to note that the Obama administration officially named its so-called drug czar today. That's another bizarre moniker in American government. And he is the current chief of police in Seattle, Gil Kerlikowske, and he will be the director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy. And so he has a fairly progressive record, as I understand it, And for our listeners in Seattle, you're not able to call in right now, but I would appreciate email comments on your chief of police. And he has been described as tolerant of an annual pot smokers event that occurs in Seattle, and in general seems to have a more progressive approach than some of the recent occupants of that office. Do you have any comment, Maureen? I realize your focus is Mexico. You may not know a thing about Chief Kerlikowski.
One of my colleagues actually closely follows more U.S. drug policy, and what I do understand from comments he had made is similar to what you just said, that he has a pretty good track record, and I think this is a positive sign, or could be a positive sign, of maybe some change in, the U.S. approach to drug policy. I think right now, actually this week, interesting enough, there is a large debate going on in the U.N. to review their 10-year declaration regarding tackling drug policy and drug issues in Vienna. And unfortunately, there has been a lot of effort still with the transition period from President Bush to President Obama to not have such a progressive perspective that we would like, and I think particularly even introducing terms which is kind of say looking at drugs as a public health problem, or the term of harm reduction, or how do you reduce the harm of drugs on a society, have been continuously vetoed by the United States. So hopefully we will see a change, but I think it may take a while to see that take effect, both in terms of international policy with the United States and also domestically.
We're talking with Maureen Meyer at the Washington Office on Latin America, and the other Mike from Aptos, there are at least two, joins us on the phone right now. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Peter. Yeah, I wanted to make sure that I'm not confused with the previous one, Mike from Aptos. I don't think there's a single person in this country, law enforcement or otherwise, that will disagree that prohibition led to the growth of organized crime and Al Capone and all that kind of stuff. But yet we think somehow that's not going to happen when we do the same thing to drugs. And we're, turning Mexico into a narco state, at least along the border, is going to be like Colombia in a decade or so.
Well, Mike, I agree with your point, and I'll just amplify it, because it's interesting that in the testimony of Dennis Blair, the new national security advisor, that he didn't describe Al-Qaeda as the number one threat to our national security.
Yeah.
He talked about crumbling economies around the world, and somewhere in the list there he mentioned Mexico as a neighboring nation that is on the verge of collapse economically, and this militarization of their effort to reduce drug trafficking is compounding that. It's expensive,
yeah.
And, of course, it causes diminished tourism because people hear about the violence, and even as
right.
Maureen has told us, that it's isolated and that most Americans have not been affected in any way, it certainly will dampen tourism in Mexico, which is a very important source of revenue and foreign exchange.
Yeah, that happened in Miami some years back. Remember when they had those robberies of European tourists and tourism dropped way off in Miami?
Mm-hmm.
Just one more thing real quick. These same people that are for this war are these free marketeers that think that the market's going to give the best solution for everything. Yet then they ignore the economic incentives of the drug trade. I mean, the more illegal they make it or harder they crack down, the more valuable.
Well, Mike, just stop right there, okay? You are speaking in such a rational way that we just must conclude that you're on drugs. Thank you, Mike. All right, good to talk to you. Maureen, stay with us. We'll continue in just a moment with Maureen Meyer from the Washington Office on Latin America. If you have a question or comment on the situation in Mexico, call us now, toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Hello, I'm Solazar.
Hi, I'm Kirilani.
Join us Saturday
from 7 to 9 p.m.
for Good Vibrations Tools for Transformation.
Together, we'll transform your relationships,
communication,
health,
and the ability to reach your goals and dreams.
Good Vibrations.
Saturday, 7 to 9 p.m.
on AM 540 KRXA.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service features full service, friendly, fast, same-day service. Or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Juan specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located at 4665 Soquel Drive at the intersection with Porter Street and Soquel. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
KRXA 540 AM is the home of Cal State University Monterey Bay Basketball. Hi, this is Rob Hunt, the voice of the CSUMB Otters, inviting you to join KRXA as we bring you the best of NCAA Division II basketball with the CSUMB Otters.
KRXA staff and management congratulate the Otters for playing into the final CCA championship level. We look forward to next season. Well done.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now in Santa Cruz, on the southbound one, just north of Morrissey Boulevard, we have a traffic hazard. Look out for the white panel between lanes 1 and 2. And at 855 Amnesty Road, watch out, there are two goats in the road there. Moving up to the Hollister-Gilroy area, we have an accident with an ambulance responding on the southbound 101. Just north of Maston Avenue, the northbound number 1 lane is currently blocked. And on the northbound 101, just south of East Dunn Avenue, we have a two-vehicle collision. Now for some weather. We've got lots of blue skies and sunshine this afternoon with highs in the 60s and lows in the mid-50s throughout the Central Coast and inland. That's your 5:40 a.m. traffic and weather. The Peter B. Collins Show is coming right back.
No fighting. Shakira, Shakira.
Esta el programa de radio de Peter B. Collins. Transmito en vivo de San Francisco.
Oh, baby, when you talk like that, you make a woman go mad.
I'm working it, Shakira.
And keep on reading the signs of my body. I'm on tonight, you know my head's so high. I'm starting to feel it's mine. All the attraction.
We're talking about the drug war in Mexico with Maureen Meyer from the Washington office on Latin America. Got a website there, Maureen, that you want to direct people to?
Yeah, it's great. It's www.wola, which is WOLA.org.
WOLA.org. All right, here's John in Carmel Valley listening on the mighty KRXA. Welcome, John. You're on the air.
I just want to share a few things in a very unpleasant conversation I had a couple of months ago with someone who's a, pretty much a fundamentalist, and I think is the archetypal person who would emotionally support a war on terrorism, on drugs, even more than a war on terrorism. She insisted that marijuana was about as bad a drug as any. Not only using the old argument that it leads to worse drugs, but she he insisted it had all kinds of physical and mental hazards of its own, and nothing I could say. In fact, when I got into arguing that decriminalizing it would make the whole situation worse, we couldn't even discuss it any further. She just absolutely went ballistic and accused me of things I won't even say on the air.
Well, then, John, tell us how your friend manages to insulate herself from ignorance or actually insulate herself from the truth and maintain this sense of ignorance.
Well, that's the monumental question maybe of all time. How does anyone stay ignorant? There are gobs of ignorant people on the planet, especially in this country. But I wasn't expecting, I hadn't run into such vehemence, such determined ignorance, talking to anybody about anything in such a long time. We just simply had to stop talking, or it was going to, the roof was going to come down or go up, depending on how you viewed it.
Well, let's throw this to Maureen, because Maureen, we do have a problem that people are irrational on many of these issues. And when you see the real harm that is being done by interdiction and prohibition, the calls to reduce harm, that's harm reduction by decriminalizing and in some cases legalizing these substances, it does just throw some people into a tailspin.
Yes, I would say not only, you know, the common citizen, if you ask certainly the former drug czar, for example, Barry McCaffrey, I think would be in the same category, and a lot of U.S. officials. I also think what we see here is definitely a need for a new approach to drug policy in the United States and internationally. Actually, interestingly enough, the former presidents of Mexico, Brazil, and Colombia, and as you know, particularly Colombia and Mexico have been hotspots for drug trafficking for years, calling on the U.S. and international community to have a reevaluation of drug policy and the war on drugs, saying it's not working, we need to do something else, and actually calling for the decriminalization of the use of marijuana, amongst other issues. The Economist, you know, very, you know, conservative economic journal, actually also just called for, again, the decriminalization of the use of drugs. I think we're at a point where there is a larger recognition of the need to open up this discussion again. Unfortunately, this may take several years, and there's a lot of political obstacles for that type of discussion. And I think in the interim, what we need to look at is, for example, in Mexico's case particularly, what can be done to reduce the levels of violence. And I think that goes back to Mexico's failed strategy of, you know, focusing much more on interdiction and on using the armed forces to tackle the drug trafficking organizations instead of looking at some of their internal problems to how do you combat police corruption, how do you improve police salaries and incentives so they do a good job in their work. How do you ensure that when you detain people, you're actually able to convict them of the crimes they've committed? So I think there's a lot of more structural issues that, in the case of Mexico, and given the reality right now in terms of, you know, prohibition, that should be taken to significantly improve the security of Mexicans and also the United States in terms of the border region.
John, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. And Maureen, one of the things here that is just so clear and fundamental is that prohibition leads to scarcity. Scarcity leads to higher prices. So the street price of these drugs is way out of proportion to the cost of producing and distributing them. And that inflated price is what makes it attractive to illegal gangs and groups to import and market these products. And so in very simple economic terms, if you remove the scarcity by removing prohibition, you will probably have the same number of users, but they will not be automatically criminals. They won't be paying as much for it. And you take the profit motive out of gun-running drug gangs.
Mm-hmm.
We just fixed it right there.
Exactly. You talk to the politicians. And actually, I want to just make a comment there, because the city council of El Paso, obviously, confronted with the most violent city right now in Mexico, Ciudad Juárez, tried to pass a resolution on, let's just talk about drug policy in our city and in the county. Let's have a new debate about drug prohibition. And it was vetoed by the mayor of El Paso. So I think there is, you know, certainly lots of people that would, you know, have the logic you just presented. I agree with you, but you also have a lot of still intends to block that discussion from happening.
Maureen, it's great to talk with you. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Peter.
Maureen Meyer from WOLA.org. That's the Washington Office on Latin America. We'll take a break and continue and talk about the Law of the Commons seminar. It's occurring this Friday at Seattle University. That's next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
50 days. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. You see the angst all over the web. 50 days of Obama and our problems are still not solved. And you know there's trouble when a governor can make more political hay by refusing to take federal money than if he takes it, which is what Republican Mark Sanford of South Carolina intends to do. But there are rumblings from Democrats, too. They complain that the stimulus plan is too small and unfocused, that the mortgage bailouts are too complex and unfocused, that Congress has too much leeway, the Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner looks too much like Doogie Howser. Andrew Grove, CEO of Intel, writes today that hope has given way to worry and frustration, and it's time for Obama to stand up and say, this is what we're going to do. Well, the president did stand up today and criticized the earmark process.
If we're going to solve our economic crisis, if we're going to put Americans back to work, then we must restore the American people's faith that their government is working for them.
And then he went off to sign a bill with 9,000 earmarks, including $200,000 for a California program to remove tattoos. It's run by a nun in North Hollywood who's trying to help former gang members get jobs, but each earmark story gives Republicans another punchline.
This gives voice to St. Augustine's lament, give me sobriety, but not yet.
There's been one bright spot for the president, the stock market blip, and the instant optimism that seemed to spread. As George Bush learned in Iraq, Americans want a clear victory. If you don't win, everything you do is wrong. If you do win, well, everything you did might still have been wrong, but nobody cares. Now this.
Whether you run a small business or a big enterprise, you face similar IT challenges every day, including network security, user productivity, network and application performance, and data storage and email retrieval. That's why over 70,000 businesses like yours count on Barracuda Networks to solve these challenges.
Right out of the box, without IT expertise, at a price that any business can afford.
Call 888-ANTI-SPAM for a free 30-day trial of any of our security, productivity, or storage appliances.
That's 888-ANTI-SPAM.
Or see for yourself at Barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Looking for a big city dining experience with local ma-and-pop prices and service? Look no further than Jim's American Chinese Restaurant at 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road, Prunedale, just behind Burger King. Stephen Lowe, master chef and co-owner of Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, brings to Prunedale his 35 years of experience in cosmopolitan San Francisco. Stephen serves traditional American and Chinese dishes with subtle, delicious French and Italian influences. Jim's has great meals for $10 to $15. For extraordinary food to die for and prices that won't dent your budget, make it a point to visit Jim's American Chinese Restaurant in Prunedale. Jim's is open Monday through Saturday, 11 to 9, and Sundays, noon to 9. At Jim's, you can dine in or take out. And catering is also available. Call 663-4888. That's 663-4888. To make reservations at Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, call 663-4888.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B's America.
This half hour, we're going to talk to a couple of lawyers who are fighting for our access to and ownership of the commons. What the hell is the commons, man? We're going to explain and invite you to an all-day seminar at Seattle University this Friday. And joining me now from Seattle, Stephen Reisler with the National Lawyers Guild. They are co-sponsoring this event on Friday the 13th, the Law of the Commons Seminar, as we mentioned, at Seattle University. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Good evening, and thank you very much.
Well, I'm glad you're doing this, and in a moment you're going to give us a pithy explanation of why we should care about the commons. But first, I was just looking through some of the organizers here, and I see my old buddy Bob Siegel is one of your co-conspirators.
Indeed he is. He's one of our speakers.
Well, I slept in his basement when I came up to Seattle for the WTO protests back in 99, I think it was.
Yes, it was. Memorable time.
So please give him my best.
He is, we'll do so.
He's a great guy and a real progressive. And also joining us is Cindy Cohn. She is the legal director and general counsel for the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Cindy, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for the work you do, too. We've been talking about you, and so it's finally good to talk to you.
My ears were burning.
Because we have been providing blow-by-blow coverage of the legal cases in San Francisco related to not warrantless wiretapping. It was downright illegal at the time. And the collection of our emails, interception of our phone calls, and you and your team have been fighting hard on these issues, and I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
So, Stephen, tell us, what are the commons, and why should a common person care?
Well, a common person should care for this reason, Peter and all of your audience. I'm going to ask people to indulge me for a little bit of radio satire for just a second, and that is to imagine that our current economic and political system is in danger of collapse. And I know that's a stretch to imagine.
Yeah.
But let's...
You doom and gloom liberals, you know?
Yeah, I know, and I know that objectively speaking that's obviously not true, but let's imagine that the current capital systems and those based on private ownership of property and closures of all property are actually teetering. So what we're doing is we're looking at an alternative system of property and an alternative system of organizing a society which is actually extremely old, and that is the idea of the commons. The commons is not just a medieval English concept, but it's one that is actually worldwide and is current. As a matter of fact, there are many commons that exist in all parts of the world, including the 21st century commons that exist in our own world.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're doing is we're saying, let's look at something that is pre-feudal, pre-capitalist, a commons notion or a common system of managing, using, and having communal stewardship of essential resources and necessities of life. And what those are in the 21st century are not just things such as access to forest, water, and to farmland, although those are also included in the 21st century commons, but they include such modern concepts of the commons as telecommunications, human, animal, and plant genomes, computer software, whether it's going to be open or enclosed, radio, like we're doing now, the Internet, legal and political systems, whether they're open or enclosed, the climate. We're bringing a whole host of people together for this entire day program, professors, programmers, historians, anthropologists, people like Cindy Cohn, who are expert in the area of dealing with the new digital frontiers, and we're trying to unfragment, if I may coin the word, a fragmented notion of the commons so that people can learn from one another and not always be reinventing the wheel of the modern commons.
And Cindy Cohn, tell us your view of what some of the essential parts of the commons are in relation to technology, the Internet, broadcast, et cetera.
Well, I don't know that EFF is... completely on board with the breadth of this conference, but there are some pieces of it that we know a lot and we think are really important. And, you know, those, I mean, the Internet really is a wonderful, I think, modern-day example of how powerful the commons can be. I mean, almost everybody who has visited a website has used open-source software that was developed by a communal group, people who were just contributing their ideas and their know-how into a common venture that really is not, you know, that has a kind of joint ownership that is really unique. And, you know, the web browser being the Apache web server, which a tremendous percentage of all Internet websites run.
Mm-hmm.
So it you know, when you first start thinking about this idea, sometimes if you're coming from a Western perspective, you think of it as something that's happening in little niches in our society. But actually, when you open your eyes, especially in the digital environment, which makes this kind of communal effort so much easier to do, you see tremendously important and you know, most computer scientists will agree, more stable and better computer software coming out of efforts that are really much more based on a commons model than based on traditional proprietary models. And I think that's a lesson that we can begin to think about in other areas. So we're starting to see, you know, what people call, you know, the commons approach to a lot of things. We're seeing a lot of work with, you know, the various different blogs presenting a different way to think about the news and to analyze the news and to report the news than you can get out of the mainstream media. That's, you know, and it's not any single thing that's owned by some other entity that's competing. It's mm-hmm. really the collective of all these other voices that now, using this technology, can be heard. That is really the true competition to the mainstream media.
Now, Cindy Cohn, in your bio, it says that you're on the board of Verified Voting Foundation, and this is an area that we pay close attention to. We do an hour a week on this program about election integrity. And I view this as a very essential part of the commons in an alleged democratic country, and that we need to be able to rely on and have confidence in our electoral process. And even though many of us got the result we wanted in the presidential race and in some of the other races this past cycle, we don't have confidence in the way those elections were conducted and the manner in which the votes were counted, particularly when privatized software has been sold to election officials and the citizens have no way of accessing it in a transparent manner and really ensuring that these systems work effectively and honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's an area where it's somewhat crazy, right, that in this area that is most important to our democracy and the functioning of our system, we have, you know, proprietary claims getting in the way of the public's right to know whether they've elected the right person or not. And we've run into these problems in litigation across the country where the company will come in and say, well, you know, we can't tell you how this voting machine works. We can't show you the code that it works on because that would reveal our proprietary systems. And, you know, the answer to that has to be, well, if your system is being used to count the people's votes, then the people have a right to see how that works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Stephen Reisler, one of the things that you and I talked about off the air as a very vivid example of commons is bottled water. Nestle and Coca-Cola now dominate the water marketing and distribution systems in this country. And they go into a community and promise some jobs, get some tax breaks, and then they pump the hell out of the groundwater there. And they get it essentially for free. Sometimes they might pay a metered rate for, you know, the water that they take out of the tap. But they are taking this resource. And clearly the fresh water, the groundwater in any given area doesn't know boundaries. It falls out of the sky or it comes out of springs, but it's not something that you can really own as private property. Yet we see a real tension between those values in the water industry.
Well, I think the problem you've just correctly identified is one that is happening in many parts of the world right now. I mean, it's happening in the United States. I'm thinking of Maine right now, where they've had the same issue of the tapping of their springs. It's happening in India with the Coca-Cola bottling company over there. It's happening in Bolivia. It did happen in Bolivia with an effort that was made in years past to privatize the water supply, an effort to even tax people for the collection of their own rainwater. Basically water that fell from the sky. The commons principle is basically to look at things such as water, absolutely essential to all life, and to say this is something which not only is available to be used by all people, indeed all life. It's not just two people. But in addition to that, it's something that the community has common stewardship over. In other words, you don't just use it and waste it as a community, but you maintain it as a community. The concept of coming in and bottling the water is a feudal concept from which private property concepts later on flow, if I could use the pun poorly.
The whole concept, no penalty so far.
All right. The process of enclosure, enclosing the commons, Peter, is exactly the same thing as enclosing the water in bottles. That is, in fact, counter to the concept of the commons. And all we're asking people to do at this seminar and in their lives is to go back and think, why are some of these things being privatized? The answer is obviously that there's a profit incentive there. And then the bigger question is, should they be privatized? Are these indeed things part of the necessities of life, the resources that are absolutely critical? And I put the internet in there with water. Should these be things which are in fact part of the common resources, which we all are then charged with maintaining and preserving and using without charging for it?
That's Stephen Reisler from National Lawyers Guild based in Seattle, and he and others are putting on this conference, the Law of the Commons Seminar, Friday the 13th, and that's at Seattle University. Where do they go, Stephen?
Well, they can go to two places. They can go to nlgseattle.org, nlgseattle.org. That'll take them right there. Or if they went to their browsers, they could simply type in Law of the Commons Seattle University, and they would find information. We have 13 speakers that we're bringing in, which range from Laura Nader, who is an anthropologist down in San Francisco at UC Berkeley.
Yeah.
Evan Moglen from Columbia University, who is one of the premier people knowledgeable about free and open software. Cindy Cohen, of course, from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Your friend Bob Siegel, who is an anti-spam lawyer expert. We have two historians. Mark Lyer coming in from Simon Fraser University in Canada, who is extremely knowledgeable and will be talking about labor law and labor history in the northern part of the North American continent. And Peter Linebaugh, who is the author of the Magna Carta Manifesto, a historian from the University of Toledo in Ohio. Just to mention some of the folks who are coming in and to give you and your audience an idea of the breadth of disciplines and professionals that we're bringing in.
And will you have real-time translation for people who didn't go to law school?
This is actually something, it's a terrific question, but this is not something which is just for lawyers. The speakers are very aware that we're going to have a mixed audience of attorneys, professors, students, computer programmers, political activists, what I call greens, techies, webbies, and all are going to be speaking a common language. We're going to be doing this in a marathon session, actually starting at around 8:30 in the morning, and then at 6 in the afternoon, we're all getting together for common conversation when all of our speakers and our whole collective group will be gathering to just talk. And I don't mean talk as lawyers. I mean to talk about what we all have learned from the experience of sharing our concepts of the commons. And the speakers are not all...